states that were actually won by Joseph Biden Jr. Those who have received the subpoenas have largely been state lawmakers or Republican officials, many of whom put their names on documents attesting to the fact that they were electors for Donald Trump. The subpoenas, some of which have been obtained by the New York Times, show that prosecutors are interested in collecting information on a group of pro-Trump lawyers who helped to devise and carry out the plan. Among the lawyers named in the subpoenas are Rudolph Giuliani, who helped oversee Donald Trump's challenges to the election, and John Eastman, an outside lawyer who drafted several memos encouraging Donald Trump to use the fake electors as part of the campaign to pressure Mike Pence to throw him the election. Last month, federal agents stopped John Eastman outside a restaurant in New Mexico and seized his cell phone. On that same day, agents also seized electronic devices from another lawyer involved in the fake elector scheme, Jeffrey Clark. Mr. Clark, a former Justice Department official, helped draft a letter to state officials in Georgia, falsely stating that the department had evidence of election fraud in the state. If the grand jury testimony of Mark Short and Greg Jacob echoed their interviews with the House committee, it suggests that prosecutors have likely homed in on how Donald Trump and his allies sought to pressure Mike Pence into ignoring or refusing to accept some slates of electors as he oversaw the final certification of the election. The effort to pressure Mike Pence into derailing certification of the Electoral College results was the chief focus of one of the House committee's hearings in June. The panel provided evidence at the hearing that Donald Trump went along with the scheme despite having been told it was illegal. At the hearing, the House committee played videotape testimony in which Greg Jacob said that John Eastman had admitted in front of Donald Trump at the January 4th meeting, 2 days before the riot, that his plan to have Mike Pence obstruct the electoral certification violated the Electoral Count Act. Greg Jacob testified to the committee that Mike Pence knew early on that the plan was unlawful. Mr. Pence's first reaction upon hearing of it, Greg Jacob said, was that there was no way this was justifiable. The pressure campaign against Mike Pence by Donald Trump and John Eastman also played a central role in a court decision this spring by a federal judge in California who said that Donald Trump and John Eastman had most likely committed federal crimes, such as obstruction of a congressional proceeding and conspiracy to defraud the United States. In the decision, which emerged from John Eastman's attempts to stop the House panel from gaining access to his emails, the judge, David Carter, noted that Donald Trump had facilitated two meetings in the days before the January 6th riot that were explicitly tied to persuading Vice President Pence to disrupt the joint session of Congress. At the first meeting on 4th of January, Donald Trump and John Eastman invited Mike Pence, Mark Short and Greg Jacob to the Oval Office. There, Judge Carter wrote, John Eastman presented his plan to Vice President Mike Pence, focusing on either rejecting electors or delaying the count. That meeting was followed by another, Judge Carter wrote, on 5th of January 2021, during which John Eastman sought again to persuade Greg Jacob to go along with the scheme. Dr. Eastman and President Trump launched a campaign to overturn a Democratic election, an action unprecedented in American history, Judge David Carter wrote.
the wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Russia says it might go beyond Donbas, where it once laid the lines of the conflict in Ukraine. The shift was articulated by Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who said one reason Russia might expand its operation are the longer-range rockets and artillery the US and NATO allies have been funneling to Ukraine.
The geography is different now. It is not only about the DNR and the LNR, but also about the Kherson region, the Zaporizhia region, and a number of other territories, and this process is continuing consistently and persistently.
Lavrov's remarks are the clearest comments that Russia's objectives have expanded over the 5 months of war. Earlier, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said Lavrov's statement confirmed what Washington and its allies had suspected were Russian President Vladimir Putin's objectives all along.
He has stated a number of times that, you know, this is a limited operation focused on the Donbas. His actions have proven otherwise.
The U.S., despite claiming that it knew about Russia's intentions, only seems to be further fueling the war through its support for Kiev. The U.S.'s military assistance has topped $8 billion U.S. dollars, part of a $40 billion aid package. And all this while analysts view diplomacy as the only tangible solution to the ongoing conflict.
The U.S. Empire's strategic aim is to expand NATO eastwards, right up to the borders of the Russian Federation, stage coups where necessary, as in Ukraine in 2014. And in the words of Canada's Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland, to vanquish Russia, divide it up and gobble up its component parts, the better to march on to China. It's a hegemonic agenda. And there is no way that the U.S. will tolerate the Ukrainian government having a negotiated peace with Russia. Rather, the plan is that to drag the Russian Federation into a long war.
Washington claims to be supporting Ukraine to defend itself. Officials in Kiev have, however, suggested that Crimea, which the West still recognizes as part of Ukraine, could be a target for U.S.-made missiles recently deployed by Kiev. The remark, however, prompted a fierce response from the former Russian president, warning that an attack on Crimea will ignite a Judgment Day response. The West, led by the U.S., apart from supplying financial aid, has also imposed a wide range of unprecedented sanctions against Moscow in support for Kiev. The bans have targeted individuals, banks, businesses, and state-owned enterprises, including the oil and gas sector.
The U.S. also planned an economic war on Russia by leveling economic sanctions, which are unilateral and illegal, by excluding Russia from the SWIFT transfer system, by stealing its monetary resources stored in Western banks, and by cutting it off from its natural trading partners in Europe.
The economic impact of the war and the sanctions on Russia is showing across the world. Inflation is up in many countries, global supply chains have been disrupted, and there are fears of food shortages. But now, experts fear the situation, especially in Europe, could further deteriorate as the continent struggles to find middle grounds on solutions to the current uncertainties.
But the U.S. sanctions backfired on the West, especially on Europe, where Europe took the brunt of the energy cutbacks. And it caused the U.S. war caused an inflationary crisis for the entire world.
All this has also led to indications of fatigue settling in the EU, The Hungarian Prime Minister has so far been the most vocal about his concerns regarding the bloc's strategies on Ukraine.
West's strategy on Ukraine has failed as governments in Europe are collapsing like dominoes. Energy prices have surged. A new strategy is needed, which should focus on peace talks and drafting a good peace proposal instead of winning the war.
But despite the heavy costs incurred by Europeans, the bloc's leaders seem to have set their eyes on continuing their way. While standards of living in many countries have already deteriorated drastically in light of decisions made by policymakers, problems may further worsen in the future. The International Energy Agency has even warned that a potentially disastrous natural gas supply crunch this winter awaits Europe, mainly due to the possibility of Russia cutting off gas supplies completely.
U.S. President Joe Biden just visited the West Asia to promote Washington's agenda in that region. Apart from encouraging Washington's Arab allies to pump more oil into the market to bring down rising energy prices, Biden, on behalf of the Israeli regime, was trying to form a coalition against Iran. But the much-publicized event failed to garner support from the United States' Arab allies. Now, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says the latest plot in the West Asia region failed because the regional countries do not trust Washington. Kanani also said Iran considers the security of its neighbors as its own security.
The Saudis are recognizing the U.S. is in decline, and Joe Biden is the symbol of America's decline, mentally, politically, socially, religiously. And they have embarked on a different geopolitical, economic, military agenda, and that is to unite with the BRICS nations and seek their political destiny elsewhere than within the United States. So I think Joe Biden's trip was an absolute failure. It didn't accomplish anything, and we knew it wouldn't accomplish anything.
Just the day before the summit between Biden and the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council countries, plus Egypt, Jordan and Iraq, Mustafa al-Kadhimi, the Prime Minister of Iraq, said Baghdad will not be part of any camp or military alliance. He also said, quote, Iraq will not be a base for threatening any neighboring countries. The UAE, which is a close ally of both Saudi Arabia and the US, also dismissed the idea of forming an anti-Iran NATO-like military alliance. We are open to cooperation, but not cooperation targeting any other country in the region, and I specifically mention Iran. Such comments show that Biden, who has practically followed the anti-Iran policies of his predecessor Donald Trump, failed to achieve his stated objective of forming a military alliance against Tehran.
So this entire trip of Joe Biden's was a futile effort, wasted effort, and I think it only depreciated America in the eyes of other nations. And for that reason, other nations are seeking political alliances elsewhere in other global institutions, such as the BRICS nations and the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative and other things.
Iran's foreign ministry spokesman also dismissed the recent Israeli threats against the Islamic Republic as psychological warfare. Nasser Kanani says the Tel Aviv regime has neither the courage nor the capability to confront Iran militarily. He also vowed that Tehran would give a decisive and destructive response to any Israeli aggression. Iran's response to any idiocy committed by the Zionist regime would be destructive.
Not only is the United States incapable of any military conflict, but Israel is also incapable of any military conflict. And Israel is incapacitated, yet they are putting on an aura of functionality, an aura of threats. But at the heart, Israel has no capacity to wage a conflict against Iran. This is all bluff, and this trip confirms it.
Kanani's comments come in response to threats made by Israeli Army Chief Aviv Kohavi. The Israeli general has said, quote, it's Israel's moral obligation to prepare a military response against Iran's nuclear program. He also added that such preparations for such a strike are at the center of the military's program. Kohavi's warmongering rhetoric against the Islamic Republic comes despite Iran's insistence that it's not seeking to develop nuclear weapons. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, has issued a religious decree against weapons of mass destruction. And just recently, Kamal Kharazi, the head of Iran's Strategic Council on Foreign Relations, rejected allegations that Iran seeks nuclear weapons. He said Iran has the technical capability to go beyond the current 60% uranium enrichment level, but it will not go that path. It's an open secret that Israel is the sole possessor of nuclear weapons in the region and has hundreds of warheads. The regime's officials have constantly threatened Iran with strikes on its nuclear facilities. The regime is responsible for the murder of a number of Iran's nuclear scientists. It has also carried out sabotage attacks against Iran's nuclear facilities. And its latest threats against Iran are just meant to shore up its crumbling hegemonic position.
As the crisis in Ukraine lingers on, the United States and its allies appear to run out of measures to halt Russia. They have imposed various sanctions on Moscow. Russia's energy, banking, and financial sectors have been targeted by the West. But the punitive measures do not appear to have the intended results. Now, the United States is proposing the idea of putting a price cap on Russia's oil.
Yeah, I mean, this is more suicidal stuff from the West. I mean, one thing which this Western-centric, this US-centric, European-centric view of themselves as being indispensable parts of the world, I think is the main problem here, because they view themselves as the center of the universe, so to speak, in everything, in politics, economics, etc. However, they fail to understand that the world is rapidly changing.
The West is trying to limit the price of Russia's oil in order to deprive the country from the money it needs to run the war. The goal is said to be to set the price at a level that covers the marginal cost of production so that Russia would be encouraged to keep producing oil. The idea, which was first proposed by Washington, was agreed upon at the G7 summit back in June. Western countries plan to allow only those raw material and oil products whose value does not exceed the price cap. In reaction to the proposed idea, Russia has threatened that it would not export oil to the world market if a price cap is imposed. If these prices, which they are talking about, are lower than the costs for oil production, naturally, Russia will not ensure the supply of this oil to the world market, which means that we simply will not work at a negative profit. It's not yet clear whether Western nations have the capability to implement such a plan, but there are already warnings that this scheme may actually backfire. Russia's president says the price cap would further propel global oil prices, and Security Council Deputy Chairman Dmitry Medvedev has warned that oil would be traded between $300 to $400 per barrel if the West goes through with the plan.
The European markets and the US markets are not the prime markets for Russian energy supplies. The prime markets are now Asia, and so they are out of step with what is happening in the world. And what this will do will exacerbate, as you noted, an already rather tenuous energy crisis, which is caused by, on the one hand, shortages of energy supplies, and on the other hand, costs of energy supplies. Because to cap it, who's going to sell it to the West under the production cost? No one, especially when the West treats them the way that they are treating them. So, I mean, it's going to be another shot in the foot for the U.S. and its vassal and client states.
Some analysts are predicting that the scenario would be catastrophic for the U.S. and the other group of seven countries. Market watchers have predicted that China and India, two key players in the Asia region, may not cooperate with the price cap. Western sanctions on Russia have already failed to deprive the country from its revenues. They have actually increased the money Moscow makes from its energy exports. Oil prices climbed to 14-year highs shortly after the war began on February 24. They remain above $100 per barrel. According to other analysts, history shows that such attempts end in failure. The US tried to fix prices for oil in the 1970s, and the UK tried to set the forex prices in the 80s. All those attempts failed, and the prices boomed after those debacles.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has advised the visiting Turkish president Recep Tayyip Erdogan against any aggression in northern Syria. Ayatollah Khamenei told Erdogan that any military action in northern Syria will definitely harm Turkey, Syria and the entire region and will instead benefit terrorists. Ayatollah Khamenei described as very important the issue of Syria's territorial integrity and said a military incursion of Syria will only benefit terrorists. Ayatollah Khamenei further added that Iran considers security in Turkey and its border areas as its own. He called on Turkey to pursue a similar approach vis-a-vis its neighbor Syria. For his part, President Erdogan accused the United States of feeding terrorist organizations in Syria. He further said Russia and Iran should support Turkish operations in Syria. Erdogan said Ankara believes Tehran and Moscow have the same opinion on Kurdish YPG militants operating in northern Syria.
Strategically, both Iran and Russia have taken the correct approach. They are focusing on the removal of the US threat first, and I think they believe they can deal with Mr. Erdogan after that, because after all, his key pretext for intervening in Syria and trying to annex part of Syria is the threat from Kurdish separatists who are facing his troops south of the border there. At the moment, there's a collaboration with the Syrian army and the Kurdish separatists in some areas of the north of Syria.
In recent months, Turkey has been mauling a military operation in northern Syria against Kurdish militants that Ankara considers as terrorists. The militants are located in the cities of Tal Rifat and Manbij.
Effectively, there is some common ground there between Iran and Turkey in relation to the Kurdish proxies, which are being trained by Israel and by the US in the north of Iraq now. So the situation is complicated, but I think that, as I said, the priority of getting rid of the US occupation has to be recognised there, even though there are many people who are very concerned about the role Mr. Erdogan's been playing for many years now.
The meeting was followed by Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad's visit to Tehran. Miqdad said Damascus will not tolerate the violation of its territorial integrity. Iran, Russia and Turkey have held a trilateral summit on the Syrian peace process. The summit was the seventh meeting of the Astana process. It was held on Tuesday in Tehran and attended by Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
We all emphasize that we should combat terrorism, and there is the need to do so, and there is also a need for cooperation among all states. Today, terrorist currents have jeopardized the security of the region.
Raisi further slammed the U.S.'s unilateral sanctions on Syria. The sanctions have put additional pressure on the Syrian people and deprived them of the possibility of a normal life.
The primary focus, the priority has to be to get the U.S. out of Syria and Iraq, by the way, because, of course, the use of terrorist groups is something that the U.S. is the mastermind of, basically, and it's been behind ISIS and al-Qaeda, all of those associated groups using the Saudis and so on.
And the biggest problem today, it was mentioned, the common will to fight international terrorism there, and also the foreign forces, meaning here the American forces and the others, that they should leave the Syrian territory.
The U.S. invaded Syria in 2014 after supporting terrorists in the country. Washington began stealing and smuggling the Syrian crude from the oil-rich eastern province of Deir al-Zor and elsewhere under former American President Donald Trump.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
Welcome back, respected brothers and sisters. Thank you so much for joining us again. Inshallah, we'll continue practicing these four important rules about Nun Sakin and Tanween.
في القرآن سعادتنا مدى الأزمان وفيه الخير للإنسان ويطوي عثرة المجروح
سورة الأعلى page 591 chapter 30 of the Quran Kareem. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
سبح اسم ربك الأعلى.
سبح اسم ربك الأعلى.
الذي خلق فسوى.
الذي خلق فسوى.
والذي قدر فهدى.
والذي قدر فهدى.
والذي أخرج المرعى.
والذي أخرج المرعى.
فجعله غثاء نحوا.
فجعله غثاء نحوا.
غثاء تنوين plus همزة. What rule is applied?
إظهار.
إظهار.
غثاء أحوا or غثاء نحوا. That was correct. You all recited it correctly. فجعله غثاء أحوى.
فجعله غثاء أحوى.
سنقرئك فلا تنسى.
سنقرئك فلا تنسى.
تنسى. نون ساكن plus
سين.
سين. What rule?
إخفاء.
Look, you all of you know them well, yes. What rule is applied? But how you apply is more important, okay? So how do you apply? إخفاء, but with light letter. غنى with light letter. How? أحسن. تنسى. That was great. Just to hide it more, okay? تنسى. A nasal sound, غنى sound.
He made it a mistake because he was reading like fast and also furious.
Uh-huh. Fast and furious. Okay, good. سنقرئك فلا تنسى. Make sure you produce a nasal sound. غنى, okay? تنسى.
سنقرئك فلا تنسى.
سنقرئك فلا تنسى.
أحسن. That was very nice. Again, again, one more time. سنقرئك فلا تنسى. When you produce that nasal sound, it becomes very beautiful. Recite it. One, two, three.
سنقرئك فلا تنسى.
أحسن أحسن.
إلا ما شاء الله.
إلا ما شاء الله.
إنه يعلم الجهر وما يخفى.
إنه يعلم الجهر وما يخفى.
إنه نون ساكين plus نون مشدد. So it's نون مشدد, okay? As if you applied the rule إدغام. So you just produce a غنة sound here, okay?
إنه يعلم الجهر. را
heavy letter with فتحة.
إنه يعلم الجهر وما يخفى.
إنه يعلم الجهر وما يخفى.
ونيسرك لليسرى.
ونيسرك لليسرى.
فذكر إن نفعت الذكرى.
فذكر إن نفعت الذكرى.
أحسن. إن نون ساكن نافع starts with نون. نون ساكن plus نون. What rule is applied?
إدغام.
With or without غنة?
With.
With غنة. نون ساكن. يمون letters. So,
فذكر إن نفعت الذكرى.
فذكر إن نفعت الذكرى.
Look, نفعت الذكرى. نفعت الذ... This is also called إدغام. But not that إدغام with نون ساكين or تنوين, okay? It's just merging. You merge, you join that to that. تذكرى, okay? Join them. Yes. This is also called إدغام. My dad, okay, when he was teaching us when we were kids, okay, he was teaching us, he was saying that idgham means as if you're trying to make two people fight. You're making them one, okay? Fight. They're holding each other, okay? Hugging each other, fighting, okay? Like this. So as if you're making one thing. From two things, you make one thing. Okay? فَذَكِّرِنَّ فَعَدِ الذِّكْرَى
A
next
mixture.
Ayah. Yeah, yeah, a mixture. سَيَذَّكَّرُ مَنْ يَخْشَى
سَيَذَّكَّرُ مَنْ يَخْشَى
مَنْ يَخْشَى The rule?
إِدْغَام
yeah. إِدْغَام Nun Sakin plus?
Yeah.
Yeah. إِدْغَام with غُنَّ or without غُنَّ فَوَاد
With
غُنَّ
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا رسول الله معلمنا هذا القرآن
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا
سيذكر من يخشى
سيذكر من يخشى
ويتجنبها الأشقى
ويتجنبها الأشقى
الذي يصلى النار الكبرى
الذي يصلى النار الكبرى
ثم لا يموت فيها ولا يحيا
ثم لا يموت فيها ولا يحيا
قد أفلح من تزكى
قد أفلح من تزكى
أحسن من نون ساكن plus
تا
تا what rule is applied
إخفاء
إخفاء تا is there okay إخفاء with غنا heavy letters or light letter
light letter
light letter من تزكى all right من تزكى قد أفلح من تزكى
قد أفلح من تزكى
وذكر اسم ربه فصلى
وذكر اسم ربه فصلى
بل تؤثرون الحياة الدنيا
بل تؤثرون الحياة الدنيا
بل تؤثرون الحياة الدنيا
بل تؤثرون الحياة الدنيا
Why did you make mistake? And it's dunya. This is the exceptional case with idgham, yes?
You read it.
Okay.
Yes.
Intentionally.
So intelligent.
Yeah, okay. So, dunya is the exceptional case and idgham, we do not apply the rule idgham. Even if we have nun sakin plus ya, okay? إدغام with غنة but no إدغام with غنة بل تؤثرون الحياة الدنيا
بل تؤثرون الحياة الدنيا
والآخرة خير وأبقى
والآخرة خير وأبقى
خير وأبقى إدغام with
غنة
إن هذا لفي الصحف الأولى
إن هذا لفي الصحف الأولى
صحف إبراهيم وموسى
صحف إبراهيم وموسى
إبراهيم Okay, I will read it again. صحف إبراهيم وموسى
صحف إبراهيم وموسى
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
والسماء والطارق
والسماء والطارق
وما أدراك ما الطارق
وما أدراك ما الطارق
النجم الثاقب
النجم الثاقب
إن كل نفس لما عليها حافظ
إن كل نفس لما عليها حافظ
Again إن كل نفس لما عليها حافظ
إن كل نفس لما عليها حافظ
Okay إن نون ساكن plus كاف إخفاء Okay, kaf. But I told you, there is a special ikhfa with this, yeah? A special sound. Ink. Oh. As if you're... Ink.
Yes.
Do you know ink in English we have?
Yes.
Ink.
Cool.
Ink. Mink. Ink, mink. Okay? Remember this. Ink. But do not make the kaf very clear, okay?
Ink.
When you finished idgha ikhfa okay, for two beats, okay? For two counts, then go on. Inkullu nafsil minkum. Okay? Ink in English. Remember this word.
Yes.
Inkullu nafsil. Nafsin. Tanween plus lam.
Nafsil.
Yeah, tanween yes. plus lam. What
Idgham.
Rule? Idgham. With or without gunna?
Without
gunna. Without gunna. MashaAllah. Lamma. What rule is applied here? Mim mushaddad.
Yes.
Idgham.
Idgham. Inshallah, we'll study Idgham. I told you that day. Two similars are there. Idgham.
Mithlain.
Idgham mithlain or mutamathilain. Okay?
Yes, mutamathilain.
Two things. Two the same identical errors.
So much thing.
Yeah. Mutamathilain, one thing.
So much thing.
Okay. Nafsil lamma. So let's recite these ayahs again and then inshallah. We'll take a break. Let our brothers take a break. Okay? They're listening for a long time to us. Okay. إن كل نفس لما عليها حافظ
إن كل نفس لما عليها حافظ
Do not stretch the sound of lam إن كل نفس No. إن كل نفس لما Without غنى نفس لما
Yes
Okay So See, inshallah. Stay with us, okay? Do not go, okay? Stay with us. Inshallah, we'll be back. But let's take a break. Recite a salawat. We'll come back.
Allahumma
salli ala Muhammad wa Muhammad wa ajil faraj.
Let's recite the Quran. A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
British paleontologists have made an exciting fossil discovery which has been identified as the earliest known animal predator.
It's quite a large fossil. It's the preserved part is at least 20 centimetres tall and it would have lived attached to the seafloor bottom. But it's a broken specimen, so we actually don't know how large the entire colony is. This is only a fragment of it.
Wilby says the animal had a stalk and a cup on top with little tentacles, which most likely used to catch food out of the water. The ancient animal is related to sea anemones, jellyfish and corals, and pushes the known existence of these species back to 20 million years. Wilby explains the fossil displays a key point in the evolution of animal. The fossil is said to be around 560 million years old and was discovered in Charnwood Forest, northern England, amongst over 1,000 other fossils. Some gardens are decorated with genomes and other cute ornaments, but this garden uses tank debris to stand out amongst others. The intention of the gardener isn't to have the most army-themed pitch. Valerie actually tried to remove the tank, but ultimately, because of its size and weight, it was impossible. So he just let it stay. The owner says he is used to having the tank there, even though it reminds him of hard times. Next to the wreckage, this family has planted cabbage and potatoes, which they harvest and use each year. The tank was left over from the war between Russia and Ukraine that began earlier this year.
Summer heat is here, and zoos are working to not only keep visitors cool, but animals safe during the hot weather. A Belgian zoo takes extra precautions to help animals survive a fierce heat wave that has left Western Europe sweltering. A Pairi d'Azur zoo, located in Wallonia in the province of Hainaut, provides animals with frozen food, fruit suspended in water, and extra showers. It has also created extra shaded areas with good ventilation along with water points to ensure animals have access to them. Zookeepers say managing animals in high temperatures requires good forward planning. Zoos across the world have a variety of responses to keep animals cool. So we humans are not the only creatures who feel significant stress during the hot months. Animals, too, are impacted by it.
Iran's city of Rafsanjan has hosted an international talent contest dubbed Stage Stars. The event is aimed at providing a chance for stage talents from across the world to come in the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali reports from Rafsanjan. Let's check it out.
This is a global stage for talents. The fifth International Stage Stars Festival wrapped up with the announcement of winners, who have been competing in four categories of singing, voice acting, show hosting, and sound impression. The top performances from each category won the golden mic and a cash prize.
The festival was a place for more serious competition between those who have a say in a stage performance. I'm so happy to be chosen by the jury as the best show host of the contest.
It was an amazing event for talents. I'm so glad to be part of this. Talents from all across Iran and many parts of the world competed in the festival, so winners should be proud of themselves.
Held in Iran's city of Rafsanjan, the two-day event brought together participants from 14 countries, including Iran, Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, Nigeria, and Turkey, to flaunt their knack for stage performance.
The scale of this contest is global. Many of us participants did not have any idea we could be stand-up comedians or show hosts. But when we got on stage here, we ourselves discovered our own talents.
I really love that, seeing that all people around the world are coming here and presenting themselves. It's a very great feeling. Of course, they will be progressed and they will develop yourself when they will get the result.
The jury is comprised of top Iranian actors, TV presenters, and voice artists. They say the competition has been tough, and those who stood out are real stage stars.
We tried our best to pick talents who really acted like professionals on stage. Not only should they care about the standards and principles of a stage performance, but they must innovate, improvise and stand out.
This festival acted like a university for stage talents. It taught a lot of lessons about the stage to participants, especially for those who failed to win the contest.
Organizers say this contest is not just about scouting for stage talents. They say the event helps shine a spotlight on talents and lead them to their community.
The fifth Stage Stars Festival is aimed at bringing stage talents to light. Many of the participants already have a few years of experience, so this stage is not supposed to discover them, but to springboard them to a higher level in their careers.
All of the contestants, even those who come from foreign countries, must perform in Persian. However, organizers plan to include other languages in the upcoming editions of the festival.
To those who won the golden mic here, this is a dream come true. But they say, aside from the prize, Stage Stars has marked a milestone in their pursuit of success, since they have now come under the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Rafsanjan.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Age is just a number when it comes to pursuing your goals. That's what 98-year-old Italian man Giuseppe Paterno has proven. Paterno has become the oldest university graduate in his country for the second time. In July 2020, he was graduated in history and philosophy from the University of Palermo. 2 years on, he's now got a master's degree in the same subject. Paterno grew in a poor family in Sicily and always had a desire for learning. But he was unable to go to university at a young age. He finished high school aged 31, 6 years after he got married. Paterno's love to study or for study never stopped, making him enter the university in his 90s.
The biggest and brightest supermoon of 2022 has risen with a crimson hue above horizons across the globe. It's also known as a buck moon because it falls in July. The name does not come from its appearance. You won't see the shape of a deer on the moon's surface or anything. It refers to something that happens in nature at this time. It's called a buck moon because the antlers of male deer or bucks are in full growth in July. Supermoons occur when a full moon comes closest to Earth in its orbit. This is not the last supermoon of 2022. There will be another in August, marking the final supermoon in this year's set of four. Some rescue stories are tragic, but this one has a happy ending. A stranded elephant and her calf have been pulled out of a drainage hole in a dramatic rescue mission during monsoon rains in Thailand. The mother elephant was guarding her calf that had fallen into a golf course drain hole when rescuers arrived. Vets had to use tranquilizers to subdue the frantic mother, but on her way down, she hit her head on a concrete block, knocking her unconscious as she fell into the muddy cavity. Rescuers used a crane to lift her out. It took two men jumping up and down on her chest to resuscitate her. Meanwhile, a digger was brought in to move the muddy earth and create a ramp for the calf to climb out. It took the team more than 3 hours to finish the operation. During a routine X-ray examination of one of Van Gogh's paintings, art conservators at the National Galleries of Scotland have discovered a secret self-portrait.
When we saw the X-ray for the first time, of course, we were hugely excited, absolutely thrilled to bits. Such a major discovery of an alternative composition happens once, twice in a conservator's lifetime.
The self-portrait was found during an examination of an 1885 painting by Van Gogh as the museum was prepping for an upcoming exhibition on Impressionism. Hidden from view for over a century, the self-portrait is on the reverse side of the Dutch artist's painting called The Head of a Peasant Woman. It was found beneath cardboard and layers of glue. Van Gogh is known to have often reused his canvases, working on their reverse side as well.
When he took the painting to Paris, he didn't have very much money. He was scrabbling around and decided clearly to use the back of these series of paintings that he'd brought with him from the Netherlands to Paris to explore self-portraiture for the first time.
Experts at the museum believe the materials covering the self-portrait were applied in the early 20th century before the art went on display. Art historians say when Vincent van Gogh was low on money, he took to painting on both sides of his canvases, but over the years, some of his reverse side paintings were covered up and lost. The X-ray image will feature at the Royal Scottish Academy in Edinburgh starting in July.
Children in Qatar are helping a conservation program revive the population of a critically endangered species of turtles. The children help release the baby turtles after they hatch, which usually takes place during the dark hours of the evening. The hawksbill mothers are cared for, if needed, when they arrive at the beach to lay their eggs. When the little turtles emerge, the weaker ones are taken to facilities at the foundation. There, they are cared for until they are strong enough to be returned to sea. Program managers say getting children involved helps raise awareness about the endangered species and how they can help prevent some of the challenges these turtles face.
As adults, we are kind of beyond hope. Our brain is no longer plastic. We can't really learn new things. But children have the power to really internalize all these things that they're learning, that they're seeing. They make these habits part of their life. They make decisions based on, is it good for the environment, alongside with economic value for money kind of decisions. And this is what we want to cultivate.
The children also get a chance to form bonds with the hawksbill turtles. Some of them have even named the one they are going to release. That's why life experts with the conservation program say only 1% of every 1,000 hatchlings make it to adulthood. Poaching, climate change, fishing nets and marine pollution have all contributed to the dwindling numbers of the species. The program was launched roughly a decade ago and has released 30,000 hatchlings into the sea in the last 5 years. Experts are optimistic about the success of the program.
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.